History at Hand, revision at your fingertips.
What was life like in Nazi Germany? In this podcast, we'll be having a look at the features of totalitarian rule in Germany, how Hitler was able to keep order, and also about whether or not the German people benefited from being ruled by Hitler. This study takes us up to 1939 and the outbreak of the Second World War. It's important that all your case studies and all your facts are based upon life in Germany during the period from the assumption of dictatorial powers and becoming Führer in 1934 and this outbreak of war. How the Nazis kept control is a key aspect of life in Nazi Germany at this time. German people lived within a police state at this time. That meant that they were open to arrest without trial and that their activities could be constantly surveyed and monitored. The police were deeply loyal to the Nazis, but it was other organizations such as the Gestapo, the Geheimstaatspolizei, and the Schutzstaffel, the SS, which were more instrumental in spreading fear amongst the German people. The Gestapo were the secret state police. They had the power to arrest anyone they had suspicions of being political opponents of the Nazis. They had the power to monitor anti-Nazi activity through tapping phones, reading mail, and relying upon a series of informants, whether they were work colleagues, neighbours, even children. Those arrested were often not told what their crimes were and were forced to make confessions under sleep and food deprivation. Many were sent without trial to concentration camps. The reputation of the Gestapo, as well as the regular police, kept many German people in line. They were so scared of it that they knew that they couldn't do or say anything which may be against the Nazi codes. Even petty criminals would give up on their life of crime, as they knew the implications. The SS were under control of one of Hitler's closest advisors, Heinrich Himmler. They emerged as a close personal bodyguard to Hitler, but assumed greater authority after the Night of the Long Knives, in which they destroyed the power of the SA. To Nazi thinking, the SS were the advance guard of the German race. They were the ones who had the brains and the physical power to be able to carry through Hitler's aims and ambitions. Fiercely loyal to Hitler, they had almost unlimited powers to arrest people, confiscate their property, put them in concentration camps. These camps were set up by the SS Death's Head units. As the name suggests, they didn't take too kindly to people who were under their authority. Although these weren't death camps, the forced labour which the inmates had to endure often resulted in physical pain and suffering, resulting in death. The inmates were used as slave labour. It was only later that these would become the death camps associated with the Holocaust. Even the judges in Nazi Germany were not impartial. Hitler had the power to sack any who he didn't trust. Like in the army, all police and judges were meant to swear an oath of loyalty to Hitler. We can see here that the Nazis relied upon perpetuating a feeling of fear amongst the German public. If they stepped out of line, they knew what the consequences could be. For certain groups in Nazi Germany, life was made even more intolerable. The Nazis persecuted many different minority groups, from homosexuals and gypsies, through to members of political groups like the Communists or the Social Democrats. Many suffered because they were considered to be not socially useful. This could include tramps, beggars and alcoholics, but also the mentally and physically disabled. In 1933, the Nazis passed a law leading to the sterilization of these people. Later on in the 1930s, a euthanasia program was carried out in which the mentally ill were killed. A public outcry, though, put a stop to this. Religious groups like the Catholic Church tried to get on with the Nazis, but other churches preached against the Nazis and their messages. Many priests were persecuted, such as Pastor Martin Niemöller and Paul Schneider. They were arrested and put in concentration camps. The people made to suffer most, though, under the Nazis were the Jews. As we know, Hitler was fervently anti-Semitic. He believed that the Jews were responsible for communism, for Germany's defeat in the First World War, for the Wall Street crash, for anything which may have made Hitler a failure in the past. Hitler believed that the Jews were like parasites, feeding off the German nation and despoiling it. He believed that racial purity had to be kept, and so marriage between Jews and Germans had to be forbidden. Much of this resentment came from the success that Jews had achieved in Germany. Although they only made up 1% of the German population, they had far greater proportion of people in professional positions, from being university professors to being lawyers and bankers. Much of what Hitler's hatred was for the Jews was based upon jealousy. It could also be said they'd provide a convenient scapegoat should things for Germany go wrong. It's important to note that Hitler wasn't the only person saying these things, and that, in many respects, the German people were willing to follow his ideas on anti-Semitism as a means of making them feel better about themselves. And when the Nazis came into power, the Jews found that they were having their lives restricted. Many lost their jobs in professions, in education, in the civil service. Germans were encouraged to boycott Jewish shops, and from 1934, all Jewish businesses had to be identified by a yellow star. Jews were prevented from sitting on park benches or going on public transport. They were banned from various societies and clubs. Jewish children were humiliated at schools as the textbooks talked against them. Road signs upon the entry to towns actually stated, "Jews not welcome here." The situation was made worse when, in 1935, Hitler passed the Nuremberg Laws. These denied Jews German citizenship, and it also prevented any Jew from marrying a German. Sexual relations between Jews and Germans were also banned. These laws encouraged the German people to take against the Jews even more fervently. Jews would be refused service in shops, for example. Many of them would find it hard to get jobs. It's no wonder that many thousands of Germans fled the country during this time. In November 1938, life got even harder for the Jews. The execution by a Jew of a German diplomat in Paris led to an outpouring of violence against the Jewish communities. In the night of broken glass, Kristallnacht, synagogues, Jewish businesses and shops and homes were attacked and destroyed. Thousands of Jews were arrested for no reason. Nearly 100 were killed. Although the Nazis didn't officially sanction this, they did very little to stop it. The police looked on as the mobs attacked the Jewish businesses and shops and synagogues. To many outside Germany, this was the first symbol that not everything was right with Hitler and what he was doing to his people. Jews were fined and also were forced to clean the streets on their hands and knees. This humiliation would soon lead to the final solution after war was declared. The Nazis continued to be very effective users of propaganda. The skills they learned in winning electoral success were then utilized in order to keep the people in control. Joseph Goebbels, as Minister for Enlightenment and Propaganda, was very effective in allowing Hitler's message to get across, to accentuate the successes of the Nazi regime and to downplay any of the problems associated with it. The newspapers were taken over by the Nazis. Editorial freedom was now non-existent. Only stories positive to the Nazis could be published. Over 1,500 newspapers were closed down by 1934 because of their anti-Nazi stance. Goebbels also saw the great power of radio. He made sure that cheap radio sets were available to the mass of the population. The Nazis also put loudspeaker pillars up in public places so that people could hear the Nazis' messages and their triumphal tunes and music, even when they're out and wanting to avoid it. In the cinema, the films were encouraged to present a Nazi message and to ensure a sort of wholesome approach to the German people. All the decadence of the Weimar days was now long gone. Alongside the everyday propaganda of good news for the Nazis, their flags, their banners, their posters, came the great spectacular events such as the Nuremberg rallies, which were held every year in September, and also the 1936 Berlin Olympics. Goebbels was determined to make sure that these events were seen by the whole world to indicate the power and the glory of the German Reich. Alongside the propaganda, of course, came the censorship. Freedom of speech became almost non-existent. Books and other works of art by non-Aryans, by Jews, by blacks, were publicly destroyed. Book-burning ceremonies became yet another Nazi spectacle. At the heart of the propaganda message, of course, was Adolf Hitler. He was made out to be the great saviour of the German nation, the man who has created a thousand-year Reich, he will make the German people again the greatest. Hitler was also quick to realize the importance that children would have in creating a Germany loyal to his ideals. Children could be easily molded into his image, and they were more susceptible and less jaded by what had happened before. He could bring up an entire generation of those untainted by the decadent Weimar days. Hitler took control of the education system. He made sure that all teachers were members of the Nazi Teachers League, and he changed the curriculum in order to comply with what he wanted the German children to learn. Children were less educated than indoctrinated. Each lesson would have a particularly Nazi message. History they would teach about the greatness of Germany in the past and how the Weimar Republic had let the German people down, about how Germany had been stabbed in the back in 1918. In science they would learn about how the Germans were the master race and how others were inferior and as a result deserved their contempt. Even in mathematics, the questions would be set with a militaristic, anti-Jewish slant. An overarching theme of the superiority of German life and culture would be present. On top of that, physical exercise was considered a vital element of education. This was to make sure that the German youth would be fit enough to become the soldiers of tomorrow's armies. Girls were taught differently in order to prepare them for their lives as wives and mothers. They were taught the likes of domestic science and childcare. It wasn't only at school, though, that children were indoctrinated. The Hitler Youth Movement was established to give both boys and girls the opportunity to mix in a Nazi setting away from their parents. By 1939, there were 8 million members of these movements. They encouraged physical training, military training in fact, in order for these children to be given an example of what military life would be like and to be taught the essential skills necessary, from cleaning a rifle to physical endurance to reading maps and following directions. As a result, the Nazis were able to dominate children's leisure time as well as their school time. This led to many children actually mistrusting their parents, who weren't as fervently loyal to Adolf Hitler as they were. The very best of students were sent to Adolf Hitler schools in order to be trained up to become the next generation of Nazi leaders. Not all children, though, subscribed to this Nazi ideal, and many joined alternative movements such as the Edelweiss Pirates or the Swing Movement. Here, they smoked cigarettes, talked to the opposite sex, even had sex. This was very much against what the Nazis wanted from their children, and these groups were severely persecuted. The role of women in Nazi Germany was to be that of wives and mothers. In 1933, a law was introduced to encourage Nazi women to have more children. Loans were given to newly married couples, and they were allowed to keep a part of that loan every time they had a child. Awards were given for those women who had the most children. Mothercraft classes were introduced, and even unmarried mothers were sent to hostels where they would be expected to have more children, often by pure Aryan SS men. As a result of these measures, the birth rate in Germany rose. Hitler was determined that Germany should be a strong nation with an expanding population. Women were also discouraged from being in the workplace. When there were so many unemployed German men, it seemed unfair that women should have their jobs, it was argued. On top of that, women should have the role in the home. Women teachers, doctors, civil servants were all dismissed from their posts. Women were also discouraged from following fashions. They shouldn't get their hair cut short, they shouldn't wear the latest fashionable dresses. Instead, they should dress in traditional attire. Makeup and dieting were both frowned upon and seen as unmotherly activities. Hitler said, "History will judge us on our ability to find the German people work." In many respects, Hitler's success as a political leader depended on making good this promise. In 1933, he appointed Dr. Hjalmar Schacht as his chief economic minister. His aims were clear: reduce unemployment, build up Germany's armaments, and make German industry self-sufficient. Because of the Depression, about 5 or 6 million Germans were unemployed by the time Hitler came to power. Many of them were young men. Hitler established the National Labour Front. This was created for 18 to 25 year old men to do jobs such as building autobahns, the German motorways, hospitals, schools, sports stadiums, public buildings, airstrips and barracks. The men had to wear uniform, they lived in compounds rather than at home, and they were paid a measly pocket money, but at least it gave them some working experience. The Germans were also encouraged to use their hands and to use simple tools rather than heavy machinery. That way, more people could be employed and the unemployment figures could go down. Another way of reducing unemployment in Germany was through the introduction of conscription and to gear the German economy towards the production of armaments. Conscription alone took over 1 million men off the unemployment registers. Unemployment was also reduced by forcing women out of the workforce. Also, Jews were prevented from being employed. Also, those sent to the labour camps and the concentration camps no longer registered on the unemployment statistics. As we mentioned, one of Hitler's key aims was to make Germany self-sufficient. This would mean that in time of war, Germany would be able to produce all that it needed to keep the war effort going and not rely on supplies from overseas, as it had done in the First World War, leading to the disastrous defeat in 1918. Although not entirely successful in finding alternative sources for Germany's needs, it did lead to some innovations in how Germany could cope. For example, turning coal into oil, using acorns instead of coffee. The failure of self-sufficiency in many respects led to Germany's needs for Lebensraum in the east of Europe. Some historians have argued that economic crisis brewing in Germany was the precursor for declaration of war in 1939. For the workers in Germany, many were happy that unemployment was going down, and many people for being able to find a job. For those in work, though, it didn't seem like everything was as good as it could be. Wages failed to rise as quickly as prices. The trade unions were replaced by the German Labour Front. They didn't really provide any sort of help for German workers' rights. Working hours also got longer, and freedom to change jobs was no longer as easy. A branch of the Labour Front was called Kraft durch Freude, the KDF, or Strength Through Joy. This organisation organised leisure activities for Nazis. The Nazis were keen to even control people's free leisure time. They organised sporting events, cultural events, and even holidays for people. It was also involved in the development and manufacture of the people's car, the Volkswagen, or the Beetle as we now know it. The plan was that you would save up for one of these vehicles, using a hire purchase scheme. Unfortunately, it didn't really pay off. The war broke out before people had paid enough to get their cars. So, we have to ask the question, did the people really gain from Nazi rule? On the plus side, many more people were employed. Hitler had succeeded in restoring German pride. The Germans felt safer. They also felt more self-confident. But we also have to consider the negatives, the lack of personal freedom, the strict control of what could be read and what could be said, the fact that the SS, the Gestapo, could arrest you at any time, if you were a member of a minority, particularly if you were Jewish. The Nazis were your worst nightmare. In spite of reservations, many people were willing to accept Nazi rule in the 1930s, so long as it didn't directly affect them. The people were left without any outlet for complaint or protest against it. Many begrudgingly accepted Nazi rule. In the examination, there are a whole host of different styles of questions that could be asked on this period. It may be knowledge-based questions based upon specific aspects like women's policy or the policy of the Nazi youth movement. In sources questions, you have to bear in mind how far you can trust them and how accurate and useful particular sources are, particularly if they have come from a Nazi background. Essays on this period fall into two real categories. Those on how Hitler was able to maintain his authority and control as dictator during this time, and those on how the people reacted to Nazi rule. As with all questions, it's important to consider a balance of things. If you're talking about how Hitler kept his position, talk about the censorship and propaganda, talk about the success of his economic policies, as well as his use of the SS, Gestapo and concentration camps. In questions on whether the Germans benefited from Nazi rule, consider a range of people. Workers, Jews, women, children. That way, you can get much more into your answer. Goodbye, and good luck.